Ladies and gentlemen, fellow Alaskans, I know all of you will have noticed that our president, Bill Egan, is not with us today. We understand that... All right. If the machine doesn't work, I have the voice that measures up to this room. You all will have noticed that our president, Bill Egan, is not at the head table. Bill is coming to the review, but is delayed and is not here yet. Neither is our first vice president, Frank Paratrovich, yet in the city. And I can't tell you why I am chosen to preside at this luncheon, except to say that Catherine Nordahl and I got here a few days early and have been assisting Vic Rivers in the arrangements. And so when things fell through, they said, George, you've got to be in. Excuse me, Vic Fisher, gosh. I meant Vic Fisher, of course. Can it be that 20 years have really passed since 55 men and women meeting here on the campus of the University of Alaska signed, sealed, and delivered to the people of Alaska a constitution for a state that was yet to be? The calendar tells us that the 20 years have indeed passed, and I think so do the silver hairs in our heads and the wrinkles that have come to our brows and our faces. The Alaska Constitutional Convention of 1955-56 was a great adventure, not only for the people in this room, the delegates, but I think for all Alaskans of that time. They were very stirring times for our territory. And I'm sure our hearts still quicken their beat when we think of the eventful years which led to Alaska's admission as the 49th state. We have seen history in the making, and we have been a part of it. Today we open a conference in which we will not only relive the events of 20 years ago and review the history of our state up to 1976, but perhaps even more importantly, try to look ahead into Alaska's future. Looking ahead is a thing men find hard to do. We looked ahead in 1955 and 1956 into a future which was murky and uncertain. Statehood for Alaska was a goal, but it was by no means a certain goal. No one could say when, if ever, it might arrive. We like to think that what we accomplished here 20 years ago in drafting a constitution for the state of Alaska helped ensure the goal and helped speed its attainment. This unique Alaska Constitutional Review is sponsored jointly by the Alaska Constitutional Convention delegates, the University of Alaska, and the Alaska Humanities Forum. This is the first meeting of the review, and it is a meeting where we are going to introduce the delegates to the Constitutional Convention. There were 55 of us who worked out the draft of the Constitution in the winter of 1955-56. The years have taken their toll. 13 delegates have died. But of the 42 still living, 28 either are in this room or will be present at the university in the course of this review session. It is my honor and pleasure to introduce the delegates to you. And as I do so, would such of the delegates as have husbands or wives here please introduce the spouse? I'm not going to say let's withhold the applause until the end. Let's applaud everybody as he stands up. R. Roland Armstrong, Army. We know you do. Thank you, Army. Frank Barr. Thank you, Frank. John Boswell. I can't tell you how many people in Fairbanks yesterday evening happened to say to me, we were at a large social affair, "Do you know who I saw today?" "Why," they said, "I saw John Boswell." It was quite an event for John to return to Fairbanks. Good to see you, John. Seaborn J. Buckaloo. Is John Coghill here? I haven't seen him myself. I know he's due. Jack? He'll join us later. George Cooper. And 20 years hence, we want the great-grandson there, George. Ed Davis. Jim Dugan. Fine, Jimmy. Good to see you looking so well. Many of us are aware that Jim has had some health problems, but nobody who looks like that could possibly be sick. Helen Fisher.
It's really great to be here and see everyone again, and I think George is mistaken or else my eyes are getting bad because everyone looks just great to me, George.
I didn't mean to say you didn't look great.
I didn't mean to.
Vic Fisher. We are all aware that Vic has done a great deal of work preparing this review, and we're most grateful to you, Vic, for that. Dorothy Oz Holland.
This is my husband, Ronya.
Tommy Harris. Not yet checked in. He will be here, he said. John Helenthal. Ditto, but coming with LaRue. Herb Hilscher. There seems to be an Anchorage contingent which hasn't gotten here yet. I see. All right, we're sorry if he doesn't make it. Jim Hurley. We all remember that Catherine was the very able assistant secretary of the Constitutional Convention. Yul Kilcher.
eight children, my former wife is now on the Marina pastures of Washington, D.C. And as I'm between wives right now, I found it unseemly and even more so unwise to bring one of my candidates along.
Elder Lee. Thank you. Maynard Lonborg. M.R. Muktuk Marston. I didn't know he was a son of yours, Muktuk. Steve McCutcheon.
My wife, Gloria.
John McNeese. Leslie Nerland. Nerland. Catherine Nordale. Catherine has a daughter, Mary, an attorney in Fairbanks who will be with her at some of the other functions.
And a son.
Oh, great. Of course, Jim. And this would have been my place in the alphabetical calling of the roll, and I'd like to introduce my wife, Mary. If anyone didn't know, I'm George Sundberg. Barry White. And last, Ada Wien.
I was not only last in being called today, but the last one to sign the Constitution. My husband, Noel Wien. I'll say something else. I don't know whether you remember, but I, Reverend Armstrong, John McNeese, and I probably took more pictures of the convention than anyone of the delegates, and I brought my pictures with me in three albums and would like to take them to the dinner tonight, place them someplace where you could all look at them and see what the changes are.
Wow. That is most thoughtful of you, Ada, and we will indeed look at the album. Now, there are a few others who, though they were not actually delegates, should be introduced at this time. There is, of course, the secretary of our convention, Tom Stewart. And then there is another man, the inventor and the successful advocate of the Alaska-Tennessee Plan, who long ago was voted an honorary delegate by the delegates, and has come all the way from New Orleans to be with us, George Lee Leitner. Two of the consultants who assisted us before and during the convention, are back with us today. One of them we didn't see, I think, actually at the convention because he was ill after having done most of the work. He headed up the secretariat that prepared those wonderful papers for us with which we started when we began our deliberations. He's back now in good health, John D. Corcoran. And the dean of the consultants who did work during the convention, John Bebout. Speaking for my fellow delegates, we are happy, of course, to be back at the University of Alaska. We have wonderful memories of our convention here in the winter of 1955-56. And we are proud to be co-sponsors of this unique conference. We hope its deliberations will be informative and fruitful. I'm sure all of us many times have thought of what a blessing it was that the 1955 Alaska legislature provided in the act which established a constitutional convention that session would be held on the campus of the University of Alaska. I believe it gave a tone to our deliberations which it would have been very likely would not have been present had we held the convention as though it were another session of the state legislature in the Capitol at Juneau. The president of the University of Alaska is with us today, and it is now my pleasure to introduce him. He is our host, and he will introduce in turn the main speaker of this occasion, President of the University, Robert W. Hyatt. Welcome to the dinner.
Well, George, when you were recounting the difficulties of people from Anchorage getting to Fairbanks, it reminded me very much of a period when I was living in England. A great storm came up and isolated not only the surface traffic from France to England, but also the air traffic. And the next morning, very large headlines in the London paper, which said, "Continent isolated." I know just how the Fairbanksans feel about those in Anchorage right now. Well, I should like to start off by saying how extremely pleased the University of Alaska is to have this distinguished assemblage meet once again on this campus. Not only the distinguished delegates who actually helped to bring about statehood for this state by writing a constitution beforehand, which was a model. I guess I should say still is a model, since we haven't had any subsequent states to develop one. And all those distinguished panelists and guests who will be discussing the affairs of Alaska here for the next day or so. The Fairbanks campus of the University of Alaska, of course, is exceedingly proud that 20 years ago it was chosen to be the site of the Constitutional Convention in Constitution Hall, of course, right adjacent to this current building. And I'm sure that those of you who were here 20 years ago and perhaps may not have been here since would hardly know how to find Constitution Hall on this campus today. A number of things have happened. A number of things have happened to the system as well. 20 years ago, this was the University of Alaska. Today, it's the parent campus of the university. And while people in Fairbanks and in Anchorage have different names for the campus, it is the parent campus, and that's the one I feel safest with wherever I go in the state. But we do have a pretty vast statewide system today all made possible really because of the farsightedness and indeed the wisdom of the framers of the Constitution for the state of Alaska. Just as an aside, I hope that the voters in this state don't offhandedly change this Constitution by amending it without having an opportunity for another constitutional convention to weigh the various events, activities, concerns, and predictions which this constitutional convention did 20 years ago. Voters simply cannot do that. And reading back through the minutes of your deliberations, it's very evident why. These things were pounded out, sometimes at considerable length, and usually the end result was fantastic wisdom. And let's not change that. George has indicated that some 28 of the original delegates are to be seen here either this afternoon or tomorrow. I think this is fantastic. There were 27 10 years ago. One more this year indicates the character of Alaskans, I guess. They seem to get stronger as the years go by. I think that's fine. But on behalf of this entire statewide university, I certainly want to extend the most hearty welcome that any of us can bring to you and the best wishes to the delegates and the panelists for the work that you have in the next couple of days. You know, it was not an accident or a coincidence that the speaker, whom I'm honored to introduce, is an outstanding educator and specialist in government. We in education are inextricably bound together with what you and we consider our common concern, that is, to determine the nature of the good society and develop a means to achieve it. Your arena is larger than ours, but the university has no less concern than you do with the nature of the good society. Yet I would admit that education is certainly not the only means by which it can be achieved, although I think it by all odds the most important. It is this thought that I have in mind when I quote Sir Ernest Barker's statement, and I quote, "The theory of education is essentially a part of political theory," end quote. In this remark, the eminent English political scientist capsuled the ideas of every significant educational theorist from Plato and St. Augustine to the present. To all these thinkers, the state is an educational society, a social organization whose foremost goal is to prepare its members for the roles it conceives they will play. Ultimately, its educational fare will be determined by its conception of the nature of mankind. Born in the North Country in Minnesota, our speaker received his early education there and moved on eventually to Harvard, where he completed his doctoral studies in 1948 on political economy and government. After spending 8 years in the political science department at Swarthmore, he moved in and out of roles where theory and practice of politics were rather regularly alternated until 1970, when he became professor of public affairs and urban planning at Princeton. Then in 1972, he returned to Harvard in his present post as dean of the faculty and Charles William Elliott Professor of Education in the Graduate School of Education. If one were to characterize our speaker's principal scholarly efforts, he would have to conclude that his dedication to problems and planning in our cities is paramount. He's a prolific writer, and obviously is a valuable board member, judging from the number of boards and commissions on which he is and has been associated. It is my pleasure now to present to you Dr. Paul Norman Ilvesaker.
Thank you very much, President Hyatt. I'm glad you took that opportunity to get a plug-in for education. And I do want to express my deep thanks to this family on its reunion, being willing to invite a foreigner in to listen to what may be said from the outside. I've just come a year ago from my family's 100th anniversary in the United States, a Norwegian clan that got together in Northeast Iowa at Luther College and reviewed a century of immigration. I feel very close to you who have either immigrated or been children of immigrants here in Alaska. I know the spirit from which you came. My appearance here is to help you renew that spirit so that Alaska can remain a symbol to all of us on the outside. I was told that your original convention 20 years ago was something akin to a religious experience. I suppose you're back for a revival. I am going to be watching very carefully how you celebrate it and hope to share in on the after hours. But I was impressed as I read through Vic Fisher's story of your convention. Impressed how you had outdone the original framers of the Constitution who met in Philadelphia in 1787. You were better than they, at least on the religious side. You put God into your Constitution. Now, as I caught a hold of the debates, I wondered why it was you succeeded where the original framers did not. And here is my research. When the framers in Philadelphia got into trouble midway in their debates, they, by the way, came close to breaking up and was hanging by a very slender thread. One morning, it was proposed that this convention invite in a minister, and from there on in, they would begin every morning with an invocation. Then the debate proceeded, should they invite a minister? Ben Franklin got up, a very wise man, and he said that he would be against this, because if the word ever got out that they were in that deep trouble, Alexander Hamilton brought the vigor of youth to this debate. He opposed it too. He said, "Gentlemen, we are not in need of outside assistance." Now, the one who really won the debate was the third, who was a Scotch Presbyterian minister who got up and said, "We don't have enough money to pay for a preacher." Now you know where I'm going. You had the forethought to have Reverend Armstrong in your midst. You didn't have to pay him. You only had to make sure that when he took that 3-day absence that he got back right in the middle of that debate about whether you kept God in the Constitution, and you kept God in the Constitution. Reverend Armstrong, my hat is off to you for accomplishing what the American framers were not able to accomplish. I thought when I came, when I saw the list of invitations, that I was going to have to deal with more governors in one room than I had ever dealt with since 1968. So I'll share a little story about coping with governors. I was then a state commissioner in the state of New Jersey working with Governor Hughes. In 1968, the staff of the governor's conference made a hideous mistake. They put all the governors, 50 plus, in a boat, and they gave them a 3-day cruise to the Caribbean where they would discuss their matters.